You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood, United States Marine Corps retired, a man who served his country with great distinction for about 20 years in the Corps, is now continuing that very important service to our country as the Senior Research Fellow for Defense Programs at the Heritage Foundation. And we've just been talking in the first segment with Dakota about the Index of U.S. Military Strength. We've gone through three of the services. We're going to talk about his own corps now, the United States Marine Corps. Where does it stand in your estimation, Dakota?
Well, for a few decades, they've had about 27 battalions, and that allowed them to maintain a rotational base on ship and then deployments for crisis response. Again, because of budget cuts, they've had to reduce the size of the service down to 23 battalions. So at present, they're on a perpetual 1-2 cycle, meaning they deploy for 7 months, come back for 14, and then right back out the door. So that quickly wears out the force. And demand for the Marine Corps units has really never been higher. So you see, again, a capacity issue, deferred maintenance, deferred modernization to maintain as much readiness as possible in the current force, but you can't extend that for forever.
And that's, of course, you're wearing out not just the equipment of the force, but you're also wearing out the people. And that's got to be a huge concern. And you've done a lot of strategic planning for exercises and actual operations in your career, Dakota. At what point does that break the force, in your estimation?
You know, when the nation needs its military to respond, just patriotism wells up. That's why people join the military, is to serve, and they willingly go out and do those things. Typically, the more junior troops are looking for adventure and deploying out and doing things. But as you start to add the family component, it begins to put pressure on the families back home, marital relationships, where is mom and dad relative to the kids, you know, those kinds of things. So over time, it does place a stress on the manpower component of the military.
We're visiting with Dakota Wood of the Heritage Foundation. We're talking about its new Index of U.S. Military Strength for this year. And Dakota, it's one thing to do, as you say, the bean counting and the green eye shade work on the numbers and how they stack up against potential or actual enemy forces. Much more intangible, and I wonder whether it factors into your index or at least your evaluation of where things stand, is the condition of the morale of the military, or put another way, maybe the culture of the military and its impact on morale. It seems to me both have been really under assault by the Obama administration for some time now. What's your judgment?
Well, we didn't include that as an assessment metric in the index. We tried to focus on hard military power as a representation or as a surrogate for all the other things that make military possible. You know, morale, recruiting, industrial base, all those other things that go into it. So we tried time and resources available to look at the hard military power, and then you can draw insights from that. But to your point, the morale of the service is good at the small unit level when people are going out and doing things. But when you pull the lens back, there are questions now about to what end. So you're sending me into harm's way. What is the mission to be accomplished? What is the national objective to be achieved? And it just does not appear that the resources are being applied with enough focus to accomplish the mission that supposedly these units are being sent out to do. So as an example, if you want to destroy the Islamic State, the things that you're doing and going about that just are not going to accomplish the mission. So, you know, the military person is saying, why am I deploying from home? You know, why am I incurring the risk of injury or loss of life if really the mission isn't going to accomplish what you say we're supposed to be accomplishing? And I think that's a real problem.
To say nothing of all the other sacrifices that these men and women are experiencing with their families and so on. Dakota, one thing that I'm a little surprised at is that you gave our deterrence forces, our nuclear forces, as high a grade as a C. It seems to me we've been allowing it to atrophy and we've not tested these forces in a realistic way, at least the warheads of them. Why such a high grade? I know it's not all that high, but is there not reason to be really concerned that this is an area in which we are at best in marginal condition and perhaps weak as well?
Yeah, it depends on how you look at it. We actually looked at 9 different elements of our nuclear strategic capability, everything from the actual surety of the warheads themselves and the delivery platform. So the missiles, the aircraft, the submarines, those are actually pretty strong. I mean, you know, they're maintained well. And if you had to send something against an objective, a target, we have the ability to do that. The worrisome part, though, is the modernization. We're not new designs. We're not experimenting, whereas North Korea, Russia, China, Iran, Pakistan are. You know, they're learning new things about nuclear weapons that we just don't have any insight into because we're not doing the same thing. Modernization of the weapon systems, the nuclear weapons complex, and I think most worrisome is the intellectual capacity. So if you're not innovating, you're not drawing in new talent, right? So that talent pool and the decay of the industrial base, you know, if you're not making new things, you see that erosion in the physical infrastructure and in your talent pool over time, right? So if you had to come back up, that's a very difficult thing to rebuild. So blowing up a weapon, good. Actually designing, modernizing, and keeping your intellectual capacity good, that's the part that's the most worrisome.
It is indeed. I must say, though, I'm a little worried about the blowing things up part, too, simply because, you know, we haven't tested any of these weapons, as I say, realistically, since 1992. And now John Kerry and President Obama apparently are determined to get a comprehensive test ban treaty that would prevent us from ever doing so again.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that all of the computer models that are used to assess the current state, the actual data that populates those models is drawn from tests in the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
You know, I had a friend told me once that one of his men in the nuclear test business told me that one of his top performing young scientists, and you talk about the intellectual capabilities, told him that he really hated experimentation because it interfered with his calculations. That really tells you everything you need to know about where we are. Yeah, exactly.
Don't mess up with my mathematical model.
Yeah, that's right. My model's perfect. Don't bother me with the evidence to the contrary. You touched on something, and just in closing, I really wanted to see if you've got it in the mix or whether it's perhaps another project for the Heritage Foundation's research. The industrial base for the United States military more generally. I know the one for the nuclear forces is in extreme duress, but how about the rest of it? Is it up to the job, particularly if we have to rebuild the military going forward?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think there is this attraction to gaining greater efficiency, and you do that by necking down how many things you're producing to get to a single model so you can get the greatest efficiency out of your production, right? Having a duplication of effort, having more capacity than what you really need at the moment is often seen as a waste of taxpayer funding. But where we're at now is we have one aircraft manufacturing facility in the entire country that produces the F-35, which the Air Force has pegged its future on. We have one tank manufacturing plant, you know? So there's this consolidation where we used to have dozens of major companies, now we're down to about 3 or 4 major players. So they produce really good equipment, but I think we're developing single points of failure in the system and a real problem in expanding capacity if we actually found ourselves in a real war.
There's so much more to talk about on that count, among other things, but I'm going to have to do it on another occasion. Dakota, thank you for this extended conversation with you today. Your work, both that you're about at the moment at the Heritage Foundation and that you've provided to the United States Marine Corps and the country in the past is really appreciated. Keep it up and come back to us again very soon. Next up, Bill Gertz takes us inside the ring right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.